It's Celtics coverage on clnsradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward. Hawford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free, 347-215-7771.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. I am your host, Taylor McLeod, and I will be here, hopefully, with my co-host, John Duke, for the next hour, taking your calls and breaking down the action from the Celtics' 97-92 loss to the Portland Trailblazers. I haven't been this frustrated after a Celtics loss in quite some time. And out of the three Boston teams, excluding the Bruins, I'm not a hockey guy. The Patriots and Red Sox have always been my top two, but the Celtics are a close third. I care about them just as much as their team. I watch, you know, every single game. But there's a different level of care I have for other teams. So I'm frustrated after losses often with those two teams. With the Celtics, however, I've always been a very optimistic Celtics fan. Not necessarily a green teamer, but definitely optimistic. However, the month of February is testing most of my patience, and this game tonight, even more so than last night. Last night, the Celtics got blown out by Toronto, the best team in the Eastern Conference, one of the best teams in the NBA. They got blown out, embarrassed on national television. I was mad for a while, but it was more of a, this team played pathetically mad. Tonight, it's just a different feeling, John. In my notes, I have one sequence that I wanted to read out because I thought it really, really told the story of tonight's game and really told the story of what's been happening to the Celtics for the last, you know, three games, I'll say. So the Bulls last weekend, Toronto last night, and Portland tonight. Gordon Hayward, right to begin the fourth quarter, Gordon Hayward dribbled up into traffic, dribbled off of his leg. Al Horford was wide open under the basket. Hayward missed the wide open pass, dribbled off his leg, in traffic, turnover, and his canter tried to go, you know, coast to coast, and he missed, and then there was a wide open putback dunk for Portland. No one was back in transition defense. No one was chasing. There were a couple people up with Cantor initially, but there was no one behind that. No one ready to stop a trailer. And it was just a wide open dunk. And I thought that play was just a microcosm of the entire game for the Celtics. There's a lot to unpack with a game like this, John. Where do you want to start? What do you think was the lowest point for the Celtics?
Where was the lowest point? It's like, you know, the lottery. Like, there's any number of possible combinations that could be the winning number here, you know? there are so many winners, but really, we're all losers, you know, in the end. You know, I think probably it's that period when they went down 10, when a number of easy buckets came in, but right before Brad called the timeout. You know, that was a period where it felt like the game was kind of coming back to them. They were going to find a way to kind of, despite shooting poorly, despite, you know, some lackluster efforts, they were going to crawl back into this game in the fourth quarter. And then it just got stretched back out to 10, and it was just, you got to be kidding me. You know, it's just that they can't sustain anything. Even the good, they can sustain the bad, but they can't sustain the good for any length of period of time. And that's the thing, I guess, from tonight's game that I take with me. They had good moments, you know, but they could never, you know, keep that good feeling going for a long enough period of time to where they were, you know, had a control of this game.
I think that perfectly mirrors the Celtics season up to this point. Not necessarily in the month of February. It's been pretty bleak in the month of February, but up until this point, the Celtics, you know, they'll play bad for a couple games, and then they'll go on an 8-game stretch where they go, you know, 7-1, play really well, good offense, good defense, and you're like, okay, they've turned the corner, and then they haven't. You know, they fall back to their negative ways, and I think that tonight's game was exactly like that from the very beginning. I think Mo Harkless had three steals within the first minute of the game, or at least that's what it felt like. He was out Tommy pointing the Celtics, like, by himself. He was doing everything the Celtics have prided themselves on, everything – We laud Marcus Smart for Mo Harkless was doing that to the Celtics. And obviously I'm not going to sit here and say Mo Harkless was the reason the Celtics lost, but the way he played is the way the Celtics are accustomed to playing, or at least the way I've become accustomed to watching the Celtics play. And to see them not be able to find any of that at all, except for when Marcus Smart stripped Yusuf Nurkic one time where he dug down to the post and just took the ball and ran the other way. For the Celtics to not be able to find that at all in a game like this, because even their good stretches weren't necessarily like the hospital Celtics or even the Isaiah Celtics. And I don't like comparing teams like that, but you know what I mean, that level of grit you need to win in the NBA. The fact that they haven't been able to find that even for 5 minutes is really concerning to me.
Oh, that's probably, like you said, I mean, it's a microcosm. It's who they are and where they've come from this season. And I don't know how you can play basketball and not even luck into that. It's almost, there's a piece of it feels to me almost like the good karma that we had with the punk rock Celtics and the hospital Celtics is all coming. The water is finding its level right now. I was using that saying a lot earlier in the year when they kept missing shots and was like, how are they missing these shots? You know, I mean, they were getting good open looks and missing and missing and missing. And their field goal percentage was just horrendous. And I kept saying, water's going to find its level. They're going to get back there. And maybe there's the karma. The karma of it is finding its level. And it's saying, you know, look, you had some really insane good luck. This year, we're going to deal you a really bad hand. Not an injury necessarily bad hand, but all the other stuff. All the stuff that went well last year, the games that you pulled out when you really shouldn't have, the shots that shouldn't have gone, all of that stuff, we're going to throw at you this year when it all should be working for you. And I mean, you can't prove that, you can't do anything with that. But truthfully, that's how it feels. It feels like everything is going against these guys every night.
I agree. And a lot of it is because of the things they're doing or what they're not doing. But some of the other stuff, like some of the bounces that have been happening, you know, someone will shoot up an ill-advised three and somehow it bounces off the rim right to the opponent, like or just, you know, random stuff like that. However, I think a lot of what's happening is being brought on to the Celtics by the Celtics. I think 2 years ago, yeah, so the 2016-2017 season, I thought that the Celtics were playing a little too soft because they thought they were too talented. And that was 2 years ago. That was before Hayward. That was before Tatum. That was before Kyrie. And I thought they were playing like that then. Obviously now, compared to what I'm seeing from the team, you know, today, it's not that at all. But I think when teams become really talented and they're as well coached as the Celtics are, at least coached as we believe them to be, especially with the offensive sets we've seen them get into where they're so crisp and the passes are so good and the looks are so good, I think when that starts to happen, you lose some of that tough guy identity, because talent makes things easier. Good coaching makes things easier. And when things are easy, I'm not saying they've been easy for them in the past handful of years. What I'm saying is that as things have gotten better basketball wise for the Celtics in terms of talent, in terms of coaching, in terms of sets, in terms of all that, I think they've lost what made the Celtics so fun for so long and why we really all latched onto them so much at the end of last season is because when you've got guys like Smart and Mook out there, you know, just battling, obviously it's fun to watch, but it brings a certain level of intensity to the game and intensity to the team that just can't be matched. And I wish this team could find it. It's not that I don't believe they can find it. They just told me that they're capable of finding that other gear that they can dig down and find.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's the right, that's the fact of it. I wrote this big kind of long, you know, Twitter thread this morning, you know, because, you know, last night I was just angry. I was mad. I was really frustrated because so much, you know, they've done so well in those types of situations against good teams over and over and over again. Apart from the home Bucks game before Christmas, really without fail, they've played well in all of those games against the iron of the Eastern Conference. And that was the first time where we saw a lot of the bad traits that we saw in the Bulls game, a lot of the bad traits we saw tonight just manifest themselves, you know, in that scenario. And I wrote this thing and I was saying, look, there's blame all around. I mean, let's blame the players. Everyone wants to look on Brad and all this, you know, but that doesn't mean that this season's over. There was a lot of let's write the obit now and it's over and done and just put
someone
them in the
grave. Twitter account called Fire Brad Stevens.
I saw that. Yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Delete your account. If you're listening to this show, delete your account right now.
You're a little busted and you need to shut up.
It's like they have time to fix this. They really do. But
yeah.
I'm not saying I expect them to. I'm not saying I expect that they're going to roll over the Eastern Conference. But I remember 2010. 2010, we were as upset, if not more, than we are right now. And that team found a way to do it. Now, I don't know if this team's got that, because that team had a heart to it that we've yet to see this group display. But that group looked like absolute warmed over dog poop. And come, May, April, June, they came within about 6 or 7 minutes of being NBA champions. So it doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but there's got to be a total makeover. This has got to be a Hoda and Kathy Lee situation here. They got to get a total makeover here to in terms of a personality and a spirit together. I saw some positive signs of that tonight, but again, we've seen positive dribs and drabs all season long. When will it be consistent? When will it take hold? That's the thing I have no confidence in.
Yeah. Speaking of that 2010 team, I was 11 years old when that happened, but I was in sixth grade, just about to enter middle school in Western Massachusetts.
There you go.
Anyways, but that team at least had the guys who can just, band together and turn it on. And I know the Celtics have those guys. It's just, I've never seen this group with Kyrie and Hayward involved do that. But I don't really want to dwell, I guess, because like you said, there is a lot of season, not necessarily a lot of season left, but the season isn't over. I'll never say the season's over until they are eliminated from the playoffs or mathematically eliminated from even making the playoffs, but that's not going to happen. At least I hope it doesn't, or else this show is going to be a dumpster fire. But if we just focus on this game tonight, there's little things that just don't make any sense to me. And Marcus Smart has a dynamite fourth quarter, right? He makes a bunch of plays, scores a couple buckets, and then they're within five within, I think, the last 2 minutes, and he shoots an off-the-dribble three early in the shot clock and bricks it. I just don't understand the lack of consistency on this team in terms of the entire season, but, even minute to minute in the middle of games, it just doesn't make sense how they can be playing one way for 3 minutes, not even make a substitution, not even have anything dramatic happen, and all of a sudden everything falls apart. I mean, tonight, like I said, in the beginning of the fourth quarter, the Celtics came out slow, but in the middle of the fourth, they started playing really well, brought it within five, and all of a sudden, the Celtics are leaving the ball out, and the Blazers were literally just taking it from them. I think Portland had 11 steals tonight, and none of them were even crazy plays. It's just the Celtics holding the ball in front of them, and Dame Lillard would just punch the ball, and all of a sudden it's going the other way. Stuff like that's really, really frustrating, and obviously we'll dive deeper into it in the next 15 minutes, but I do want to get to the call lines. Reminder that our call line is 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. John and I will be here till 11:30 taking your calls. I want to go to 757. Oh, 757, drop 570.
They're just
yo,
they're,
fellas.
There you
oh,
go.
Hey, what's up?
What's up, guys? It's Nick.
Hey.
Oh, hey, Nick. How are you? Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Yo, how's my audio?
The founder of CLNS Media.
How's my audio?
Quiet.
You sound fantastic, Nick.
Oh, good, because I have you on speaker. It might because my phone won't take a charge. But anyway.
Sounds like the Celtics defense.
This is crazy.
Oh!
It kind of that's a good one. This is crazy, John, because 2010, like you're talking about then, you were always the guy that kind of talked me off the ledge without even talking to me, just on your show. You did it back then.
Uh-huh.
And now, you're questioning too. I was so tempted this morning to take your entire Twitter thread, put it on on our website and just put Duke colon and a good caption, right? Because, or a good quote, because it was a rant of epic proportion.
I was ranting. I was ranting.
You were ranting. You were
I
ranting.
Don't feel differently, really. But what do you think? What
did you say?
I don't really feel differently right now, honestly, even after this turd burger.
No, this was like, I don't even know how to explain what this game was. I'm not quite as frustrated because they competed a little bit, but it's still the same BS with this team. The difference between 2000, I always think 2010 too, but that team was like battle tested. And whatever was going on in the locker room, they were galvanized. They left it in there. And, you know, you covered them. They could flip the switch because of the chemistry and the years that winning a title together. But this team is just it's a bad look for the Celtics, but this is a really bad look for Kyrie too. I'm just gonna say
In what way? Why is it a bad look for Kyrie?
Because I just think I feel like the first of all. From it's becoming cliche, the leadership thing, but there's that whole situation. I mean, when it all comes down to it, the buck stops with Stevens, Ainge, and Kyrie. When you're talking about what went wrong this year, because they're the people who put the team together, and then Kyrie is what they're building around. And his inability to lead, I think, right off the bat, that is definitely a bad look. And then just his overall – since February 1st, let's just say it, there's been a lack of energy, focus, they're soft, they're timid, and Kyrie's been a bitch. And what was February 1st? I don't even know what their record has been since February 1st, but it's been deplorable. But February 1st was the day that he goes out – and decides to start commenting on the Anthony Davis nonsense. And it's just, a bad look for him. And since then, his play has been so up and down. I mean, there have been times where I'm watching him off the ball, and he's not even defending. Like, he's not even in position at all or paying attention. Someone has got to say something, or I'm going to get myself in trouble with this continuing to go on off the
I mean, well, like, okay, so Kyrie's my favorite Celtic. I'll defend Kyrie forever. Like, I am a Kyrie stan. Like, I won't deny it. I'll come up with a defense for anything the guy does. That's just who I am. But, like, I don't know how Kyrie's leadership causes Daniel Tice to shoot 5 air balls and miss all of them not 5 air balls, but 5 of the worst shots, one of them air balls. I don't get how Kyrie's leadership is causing – Marcus Smart to pull on the dribble 3 early in the shot clock when they need 5 points to tie the game. I don't understand how Kyrie's leadership is the problem with all this. I agree that it's been an issue, and I don't think he's handled this as well as he should have. I have other opinions about, the reasons why he's been freaking out, namely that he said he was going to re-sign multiple times and then was badgered for 5 months about if he was going to re-sign or not. I think that probably played a role.
I have to interrupt you there, Chuck. I have to stop you there for a minute because
I'm glad I got to stop listening to myself talk.
I'll be honest with you. I have, and I think Duke knows, but if you guys watch the Garden Report, I have been a Kyrie guy too all season until February 1st. So, and I got to stop you at that point because everything that you're going to start remarking on with, I don't even want to say shots at him or questions about him and what his future is going to be after the Anthony Davis demands have come from the national media and the New York.
Oh, I agree.
They've not till very, very recently come from the local media. So why is he taking it out on Boston is my question. So he's taking it out on the Boston media. He's basically – in these games, he's almost – the last couple, he's been almost non-existent in spurts. Why? I mean, if I were him, I would certainly not – I don't – the Boston media, like, John, they're vicious. Yeah. They have been throwing him softballs all season until this week. Maybe the Clippers right. game started it. Even Felger was going on and on about the CSN gushing over them when they're losing. And then the Clippers game happened, and that was it. And they said they've gotten nasty even. Because I think at some point you got to say, anyway, I'm ranting.
No, but to go to that, though, I mean, in terms of the media thing, I mean, this all started when Kyrie said, you know, basically when Bull Pett asked him if he wanted to pour water on the idea of that conversation he and KD in the back room, you know, and I, again.
But that's only the latest in a series, John, right?
Yeah, but that's the only one where he directly, like, confronted and really, you know, took that head on with the Boston media, I thought.
I don't know.
He's upset with the media, but that was the first time when the person in front of him was a Boston media member whom he was, you know, really attacking. That's a little bit harsh, but certainly challenging in a way that was not really reflective of anything the Boston media had done. And really was incongruous with what has happened. It's Chris Haynes who was carrying water for Clutch Sports. It's Sham Sharania. It's Brian Windhorst. Those guys have been carrying the water, bringing this story, and keep bringing all this on. And that's why, you know, Kyrie is so upset.
Well,
and the one place that he hasn't gotten that is the Boston media and the Boston fans. And now he's having turned that wheel. He is getting some of the worst PR advice ever. And it's hurting him, not just with the media, but he's hurting him with the fans. I mean, just take a spin through Twitter, right? And we all know it's tough. I like Kyrie the player. I like what he's saying. I agree with his larger, but the dude needs to understand that his war against the media empire, as he calls it, I think, and to your guys' point, is hurting his team. I think it's having an impact. It's pretty clear. There's a one to one there.
And I will admit that there's a lot. Like, I think Kyrie's biggest mistake was a relatively harmless comment at the time, was saying that he called LeBron. I think that was his biggest mistake that he made, because that's what I mean. It opened floodgates, because normally when the best player on a different team in a different conference requests a trade, you're not automatically a New York Knicks or an LA Laker. Anthony Davis requested a trade, and all of a sudden the narrative was that Kyrie and Anthony Davis were going to join LeBron very fast. And I think right now the NBA's media cycle, and you guys are much older than me, much more actual media experience. I'm just sitting in a room in Syracuse, New York. But, like, it seems to me that the media circus is at its peak right now, and he's right in the middle of it. He is the bullseye.
Right in the middle of it.
No, I agree.
He puts himself.
I agree, I just want to
out there. Like, I was always a Kyrie guy. I always was. I think February 1st, when he made those absolutely not necessary comments about July 1st, started it, and my ears perked up. Now, I've seen signs here and there, because I had seen him. He snaps at Mark Murphy every time he asks a question. But I don't think it started. The other thing in press scrums is he constantly will, since February 1st, he's basically very, very aloof and short with the Boston media. But if the TNT is in there or ESPN is in there, he's animated and the way he always was with the Celtics media too. So I don't really know. I think that the Steve Bulpet thing, if he was totally – I think Bulpet was trying to do him a favor almost.
Mm-hmm.
And he just didn't get it. And I don't know. And then the other night, I mean, he started off that press scrum last night where he was talking okay. And then Murphy asked him that question. I think it was about transition defense or something. And he just got short, and then it was one-word answers right after that. It's perplexing to me. I've never been a fan of, covered, or just observed a team like this. I mean, John, maybe you have back in the, like, 06 years. I don't know. This is so frustrating to watch in every way.
You know, I think going back when Taylor was, in elementary school, I didn't realize you. I knew you were that age, Taylor. But sometimes you forget how long I've been doing this.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah.
It's,
I'm 20.
You know. So, but this, it's all good. It's all good. You know. I think even back in those olden days of 06, the pre KG days, that team was. There was a lot more of the punk rock Celtics, the 2014 Celtics, where, you know, they weren't good, but there was
right.
a future, and you were looking to that, and you were looking to, you know, Smart, and you were looking to, you know, Olynyk. I mean, Sullinger, right? I mean,
right.
I think those were, in those days, Al Jefferson, Delonte West, Tony Allen, you
right.
had characters. This is by far the most frustrating and on par with 2010, without a doubt.
Worse,
and I think, or worse. Right,
don't,
because
John,
to Taylor's point, this the media case right now, this is as big as it has ever been. And the star on this team is at the epicenter of every free agent conversation around there. Not necessarily because he's the one that's going, but he's connected with Davis, and he's connected with KD, and he's connected. And it's just exhausting. It is so exhausting to be a fan of that.
He has to be exhausted.
Yes.
Like,
I think that's what we're seeing.
And do you really?
I think that's
yeah.
I think that's a lot of it. I think it's weighing on him. I think
then
look at the energy he played with after he said, I'm gonna stay. He was amazing the first month and a half, 2 months, 3 months of the year. I mean, he was getting loose balls and all that. You know, it was a weight was off
I
his
know.
Shoulders.
I was right
way.
With him. I was
yeah,
right with
too.
Him, and I talked about in the beginning of the season. I mean, I talked about how, you know, the his animation, the way he's animated with the media on the court. He's just other. I called him otherworldly. I mean,
yeah.
This has slipped me sideways, and I just don't understand it. But it's a bad look for him, but it's a worse look for the franchise, and it drives me crazy because Danny Ainge traded Paul Pierce and KG, granted at the very end of their careers, but like two Hall of Famers and legendary Pierce, turning into a legend in Boston, out to rebuild this team in such a brilliant way, and he's executed it, and now it's here, it's right in front of us. And they've fallen apart. They have completely fallen apart. I would say, I wouldn't be shocked if they don't pull it back together, but something drastic has to happen. The only things I saw that were the only signs of the Celtics being at Boston Garden tonight was the fact that Tommy Heinsohn was complaining about no calls more than I think I've ever heard him do it. That and also – the only thing that was – there was a couple encouraging things tonight, but one really was that Stevens was actually using timeouts. He wasn't trying to let them play through it. I think he's got to call more plays, John. Taylor, what do you guys think about that? I think it's – these guys are not great decision makers.
No, outside of a couple,
I talked a lot. Go ahead.
No, outside of a couple, I fully agree. And there was one set tonight, I think it was right out of a timeout in the fourth quarter, where it's obviously a set play. I can't even remember the exact play off the top of my head, but it was an easy bucket. And I think you're exactly right. There's been a lot the last, it seems like month, 3 weeks to a month. There's been a lot of dribbling to the free throw line, stopping and just getting the ball stolen. And I've never seen that from the
yeah.
Celtics, but and everyone's doing it. It's not just a couple guys. It's Kyrie, it's Tatum, it's Hayward. It's obviously Terry Rozier. He just gives it away. Jaylen Brown, it's Al Horford, it's everyone, and I just don't understand it. I mean, tonight, how many times tonight did either a guy get the ball just taken right out of his hands, or he's standing there looking around, and all of a sudden the Blazer punches the ball and he has to go chase it down? I mean, little stuff like that, that's not what we're used to seeing from this team, and we shouldn't be seeing it from a team so talented and so well coached. Yet Marcus Smart standing there with the ball, and Damian Lillard is just taking it out of his hands, and that's not supposed to happen.
I agree.
I'm as much of a, No, it's not difficult. And I'm as much of a smart as Nick knows. I'm a big, I'm a big smart guy. Love smart. I mean, he's just, you know, I've been in that guy's corner, and I continue to be, but he's had a lot. He and
Marcus Morris needs to lead the starting lineup.
I agree. He needs to get out.
Been bad.
They need to move him to the bench. You know, and I would either you bring Baines into that spot, or you go back to the starting lineup that you started the year with, just see what happens.
You know, John,
I think Jaylen Brown has earned a spot in the starting lineup.
John, that's where my brain is going, not just from the Jaylen standpoint, but from the Hayward standpoint too.
Yes.
I think it would give Hayward right now, his mobility looks the best that it has all year long. He's being underutilized. Brad needs to be calling plays for Hayward because he's still timid.
Mm-hmm.
And moving him back to the starting lineup, I think would be a great kick of confidence for him. And I also think that Jaylen, I would just get, if I were Stevens, and I'm no Brad Stevens, I'm not pretending to be. But if I were Stevens, I would just sit Jaylen down and say, dude, you are excelling in your position right now. I am going to shake it up. Would you like to stay where you are right now based on the play? Because he's playing well. Or would you want to go to the starting lineup and kind of leave it at that? Because the only issue you're going to have, and John, I think you would agree with me just knowing your opinions, and we both love Smart, but there might be an issue with Smart's attitude and all that because he's really been one of the shining stars all season long. Morris too.
No doubt.
So you're going to look at that then. Are their input going to diminish as much, even more than they already are?
Yeah, it's tough. I agree with you. No, I know what you're saying because I think Jaylen did take that as a demotion to begin with, and I think it took some time, but he found himself by doing that, by making that move, you know, and he looks great. I mean, you could argue tonight's game, he looked as good as he did at any point in his career. I mean, he's under control. He's making plays. You know, he finished the game, which is not something he's done of late. So I would absolutely endorse that. I think you're right. I think Hayward and Jaylen have been two of the better net rating players. And, you know, you see the start that they got off to tonight. They had a good first quarter here, a good first quarter against the Bulls. And the issue is the second quarter. But maybe shaking it up gets Mook back to the second unit, putting Smart back to the second unit. Maybe you force Smart to be more of that ball handler and move Rozier into that secondary role. Because that unit is the one I worry about. You know, night like tonight, shots didn't fall. You know, that I don't feel like that's going to happen again if they play this game, you know, nine more times. Mm-hmm. But it's, okay, what's going to happen against the Wizards on Friday? And when that second unit comes in, you know, and Rozier is handling the ball and making the decisions or not making the decisions more appropriately, I don't have any faith in that at all. 0-0-0. I think the kid can play. I think he's a good player, but he's not a lead guard. And he just, until he gets his head on right, that's just not going to be where he is.
Which kind of smashes the whole insurance policy for Kyrie theory. Because, guys, I mean, truth of the matter is, I might be less than 50-50 on Kyrie returning. So that Kyrie or that Rozier position is going to be all the more important. I'm just telling you what I sense. I have no inside track on it. I'm just telling you what I sense, and it's Kyrie Irving. I know Taylor, you love him, and I do. I love him too, and I find his eccentric nature to be actually fun and intriguing to cover. Oh, but remote turned. The dog stepped on the remote and the post game came back on CSN. So I'm all, what was I saying?
You guys probably think Kyrie's out of there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I think he's checked out. I do. I don't know at this point that this sounds going to sound crazy. I've said it on the Garden Report, and just to say it in maybe a more less emotional way, I don't know that it's good for Kyrie to stay, and I don't know in this condition, unless there's a huge turnaround, I don't know if it's good for the Celtics to have Kyrie stay. So I think it, but I again, it all depends on how are they going to finish the season, let them get into the playoffs. Hopefully I'm eating crow in May and you guys are playing this audio clip and laughing at me. And I mean it.
Yeah,
because
hopefully.
I don't want to be right. Yeah, I don't want to be right.
Honestly, he's my guy. He's my guy forever. Like, so, and I've told you this, Nick, before, so it probably won't be a shock, but, like, LeBron's my favorite athlete of all time. He's just been my guy.
I know.
I was really young.
Went through this.
Yeah.
Oh,
no,
man.
So I've watched a lot of
I didn't
of
know that.
Listen to John.
Yeah.
I love
you're,
that you're
cutting
about
out, Taylor. I can't hear you.
Yeah. Okay. No, so I watched a lot of Cavs basketball, and that's why I started liking Kyrie. And, like, so I, like,
right.
And when the Celtics traded for him, I was ecstatic. And last season, before he shut it down with his knee, awesome. I had a great time, and I was so excited. And then the first couple months of this season, obviously the record wasn't where it needed to be, but Kyrie was playing well. Obviously, since then, shit has hit the fan, and I just missed the day.
Taylor, since when? Tell me.
Since February 1st. It's most definitely since February 1st. But I don't think that all of it is his fault, like some people are painting. Obviously, I'm not saying that was you, but I think a lot of people are saying that.
Why isn't the team? I don't want to be a douche about this, and I don't even know if I believe what I'm saying here. But what? Because I'm taking this in as you're saying it. Well, I'm just reacting. Why then isn't his teammates galvanizing around him? Because they're certainly not. They all look scared to say anything. And the ones that are saying things, Marcus Smart, Marcus Morris, those are guys that are freaking pissed off. So why wouldn't his teammates galvanize around him if what you're saying is true? I don't know.
No, I think that's a good point. And like you said earlier, if I don't know if it's good, like you said, I wholeheartedly agree. And like I said, Kyrie Stan, I don't know if it's good for either side if he stays in this condition. Obviously, if things change and things get back to where they're supposed to be, obviously you want Kyrie Irving on your basketball team. But I don't think that your point, what you made a couple minutes ago, is crazy at all. I just think that it's such a difficult time. And obviously I'm not there. I don't know what's going on. I don't know how people actually feel. I only know what I read. But I just miss the days where the problem was Kyrie saying Jaylen Brown like wasn't hustling enough. I miss those days so much.
Well, I agree with you, but that had its own problems. But I agree with you.
No, I know, but those problems were not these problems.
No, I know
right.
It, man. I'm with you on that.
I think
if you
so,
guys have more callers, you could drop me off, guys. I can go at any time.
No, you're good. You're good.
If you got
callers.
The boss, Nick. Why would we?
No, man. I'm not the boss.
No, I got you.
I'm on with the OG right now. Are you kidding me? You're the boss.
So
I'm the new guy.
Yeah,
we got the new G's, we got the OG's, we got all the G's.
So I want to revisit something I said on Celtic Stuff Live here this weekend that you posted the clip on Celtic's blog, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is like I think if all things are static right now, sure. Like I don't think he would want to come back under this scenario, right? I mean, and things could change in the playoffs, but I'm just putting that aside. I don't think there's any way this team looks the same, right? I mean, there's just no way that Kyrie comes back with the same group of people, right? There's no way that the same group of people are back and Kyrie's here. Something's going to break. It's one way or the other, right?
I think Ainge made a colossal error not making any moves at the trade deadline, but that's a whole other story. Go ahead, Duke.
If he moves Rozier, maybe that kind of opens up a different kind of mind space for everybody. But to me, like so much of this is about that connectiveness, right? And a lot of that is people not accepting roles. It's about not being prepared to do that. The specter, everything hanging over them. Kyrie's free agency, the trade, the trade for a top five player that will send a good number of these players out of town. Who's in, who's out, guys coming in who are injured and now trying to play, young players trying to establish themselves. I mean, this is a hot mess of a situation. There are very few situations that could be as bad as this one, but it's never going to happen again. So, Kyrie, if everything was static, there wasn't some sort of Anthony Davis potential out there, I would say, okay, well, yeah, I agree. But if they make that move for Davis, this whole thing looks a lot different, right? If Smart stays and they re-sign Morris and they've got Davis and they've got Kyrie, and I would assume one of Horford or Hayward remain at least, to me, that's a team that can play with Kyrie and would be happy, and it all works, and everybody accepts a role, and Shemmy is now the eighth guy, and who knows, maybe Williams is here, Baines. I mean, everything kind of finds its place. I think right now, because we still have that of so many different competing interests going on, it's next to impossible until they all see one goal, which is a championship, or put themselves in one place, which is kind of what that thread I was talking about today. It's never going to change, but it's going to change July 1st, whether we like it or not. And we may end up saying it sucks. Kyrie's gone to XYZ city, but then the question is, do you trade for Anthony Davis and lose a good number of these young players and try to build around him? Or do you just stay with the young players and run it back?
John, it's all fine and dandy, and I don't disagree with you. I think it's definitely a possibility. But it's still inexplicable to me why Kyrie doesn't just end it. Like, he could end it. So just sit down with Jackie Mack and do a 10-minute interview. Not friggin' Rachel, who I like Rachel Nichols, but that was a softball interview.
Regardless of the interview content, that was a mistake by Kyrie. He should have never.
Yes.
I didn't understand why he did it. I didn't understand the questions. That felt like it was just like they were both at the same place for the All-Star game, and it happened. That didn't make any sense to me. I agree with that.
Made no sense, but he's had the opportunity to just end it because we're all saying it. We're all saying it prior to February 1st. It wasn't sunshine, right? But they were trending in the right direction. That homestand in January was outstanding, and I remember the night he dropped that stupid LeBron comment. And I only say it's stupid because Kyrie, sometimes just keep it to yourself, man. Right, even LeBron, I don't like him, I hate him, and now he's obnoxious about it. But even in the beginning, he wouldn't comment on it. So, to me, it's just all self-imposed. It's just so frustrating.
Yeah, I agree.
Dude, just turn it off.
I agree. Well, hey Nick, we got a certain producer down in Florida who probably wants to get on the air.
Oh,
for a little bit,
I gotta hear it. Just put me on hold. I'm going to want to listen to that rant. Actually, you know what? I'll listen online. I'm going to drop off. Thanks, guys.
Perfect. Thank you, Nick. Thanks for the call.
Good stuff, Nick. Good to talk to you.
You always.
So, John.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about – we did the standard, ESPN media cycle there for about a half an hour. just like the Kyrie – like all the time Kyrie coverage, which is honestly very weird to me because I think that initial LeBron comment he made, I don't think he thought it was going to start anything, but he should have known better because it's Kyrie Irving talking about LeBron James. I really think he just said that as a like, oh, I'm learning to be a leader. So, I apologize to the guy who I probably should have learned from a little bit better. I think it was pretty harmless in the moment, but obviously not so harmless now. I do a little bit of basketball talk. We'll bring Nick in for that. Nick Sesento, of course, that's who is the producer in Florida who's on the phone. But before we do that, I do want to hear a word from Boston Barber and Tattoo.
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up. And it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
Thanks again to Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. We're going to go back to the call lines. I believe this is our guy, Nick Sesento. What's up, Nick?
What's going on, Taylor? John Duke, man. Good to hear from you as well.
Good to talk to you, Nick. Always.
So, Nick, before we dive into anything, I do want to let you know I have a pressing basketball, like actual real basketball, not media stuff, but real basketball, the stuff we watch on TV. I've got a point I do want to make. So we can't get into this Kyrie conversation. I can't take any more of this. I'm gonna fall asleep, man. It's exhausting.
Oh no, I mean that was really all I had to comment about, but I wrote it down so that it could be absolutely succinct and brief because Taylor, when I heard you say that, like when Nick, and I'm 100% on Gelso's side, I'd probably say that I'm even less than 40% that Kyrie's coming. I would say like more like 10% Kyrie is coming back and 90% he's leaving. And when I heard that you kind of reacted like, how could this possibly be on Kyrie, be a bad look for Kyrie? I was almost shocked that, like, you know, Taylor, you're not, like, aware of the things that have been said about or the criticism.
I said I understood it was a bad look. I just – my thing is that in the beginning of the season, he said he was going to resign. He made a commercial with his dad for Nike about wanting to resign. But the questions about resigning never, ever stopped. So finally, when he snapped, it became, oh, my God, Kyrie's leaving. Kyrie wants to be a Knick now with Anthony Davis. That's all I said.
I agree with you, but I mean, where the non-committal aspect, and we all know that Kyrie is a moody player. You know what I'm saying?
He's a weirdo.
He is. So that's why I think that the questions. That's why I think the questions didn't stop. But I'm going to keep this succinct because I know you want to move off the Kyrie Irving topic. But I wrote down what is basically a chronological order, going back to last season. Kyrie Irving was injured. And he missed Game 7 of, I believe it was the Milwaukee series. He missed Game 7 of the Milwaukee series for his first surgery, but a surgery that he probably could have scheduled for the day after or some other time when he could have been on the bench with his teammates. That goes to the leadership aspect of taking control of this team, the commitment to the future of this team, that he was going to be there regardless for the biggest game at that moment of those young players' careers. And then in the offseason, we already mentioned that. He was noncommittal for almost the entire offseason until he finally made that, if you'll have me back, I'd love to be back. I want, you know, my number to be my number 11, which my father wore at, you know, Boston, BU, as a Boston University Terrier. I want nobody else to be able to wear number 11 in TD Garden. So he did, and then he made the commercial, like you said, where he wants to be back in Boston. But then come that point, sometime around, you know, after the new year, he has the argument with Gordon Hayward on the court, after which he goes and calls out his teammates in the media. That's not where he says, these guys don't know what it takes, the daily grind in and out, to what it takes to win a championship. And I think that at that point, he lost a lot of those young teammates who said to themselves, you know, justifiably or not, hey, we just went to the Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and here we have Kyrie, who, granted, had terrible teams, but never made it anywhere without LeBron James on his team. So who is he to call us out like that? Then you have, immediately after that,
he's the guy who hit the shot that he called the 73-9 Warriors.
Then he calls LeBron James. And the problem with calling LeBron James is not just that he called LeBron James, but also that he then told the media that he called LeBron James. I mean, you already mentioned that. He didn't need to do that. Then the AD situation comes out, and we all understand, and we all dissected down to the minute syllable of what he said, whether the frustration was primarily with the media or the frustration was with the Boston Celtics when he said, I don't owe anybody-ish. But it was regardless of how you interpret that statement, it didn't help anything in terms of the media perception, the media narrative, the media anything. It didn't help. And I think that's one of the things with Kyrie that he's not aware of. He's not aware of how his comments affect the media narrative, and he seems to be more concerned with trying to drive the media narrative or get back at those in the media rather than thinking about what's best for his team. And I'm going to finish this up really quickly. So he doesn't owe anybody. He doesn't owe anybody shit. Then he has the situation at Madison Square Garden. Knicks fans cheering for, we want Kyrie. Waits 10 minutes on the court for his dad to come down out of the audience to get one of, I'm sure, 573 game-worn jerseys that his son has given him throughout his 25 years or 26 years on this earth. Then is seen at All-Star Weekend basically feeding grapes and tickling the feet with, you know, Kevin Durant.
No, man, they're best friends. Dude, what are they supposed to do?
I know, I understand that, but the thing, Taylor, and this is the thing, he there's nothing wrong with that, but the thing is he could be aware of how this is being portrayed. He's providing fuel to some people. It's cool to be friends. He was also down in Miami doing something, you know, after All-Star Weekend in the little break between times down there with Kevin Durant. Do you have to be aware of how the media is spinning these things and not feed into it as much as that's counterintuitive to a guy like Kyrie Irving that wants to be an individualist or whatever else it is? A couple more things. Then he has to sit down with Rachel Nichols, where he reveals that there's hot feelings between Terry Rozier and he about the fact that Terry Rozier has had his minutes cut. Now, we know Terry Rozier has been suffering this season, but why does Kyrie Irving, the man who's supposed to be the leader of this team, who's a veteran, who's won a championship, have to come out and tell the media about what problems that are happening in the locker room? And then a couple more things. Just the other day, the last game, Marcus Smart said that it feels like they're not playing together. There was an issue. The reporters asked Kyrie, said, "What do you think about Marcus Smart?" He said, "That's Marcus Smart's opinion. Do you agree?" Stands up and gets out. Thanks, Kyrie. Asked about the defense. I don't know if this is the same, you know, I'm reading these things. I didn't see the actual post-game things. Then asked about the defense and if it was incumbent upon him to, you know, kind of, you know, redouble his efforts on defense, or the team should redouble their efforts, play better together as a unit on defense. And he says, "That's up to Brad." All of those things, it's not just one thing, Taylor, it's all of those things. When you put them cumulatively, it does not seem like Kyrie Irving wants to be a Boston Celtic or is committed to being a Boston Celtics long term. And that's all I have to say. You can move on to whatever else it is. Thanks for taking my call. Great show, you guys. It was great to hear from the boss, Nick Jelsu, as well. John Duke, awesome to hear from the OG. Nick. Taylor McLeod, go Q's.
Thank you very much. Hey, have a good one, Nick. I look forward to working with you.
Take it easy.
Have a good one, bro. So, like,
always
bring the thing is, so now that it's, you know, I don't have anyone who can check me right now. Like, my whole thing about...
You gonna stop and pull up a three? Like, Marcus Smart, is that you?
No, or like Daniel Tice? He did that tonight. Yeah. In transition, Tice pulled a three.
God.
Ah, man, I wanted to drive the 4 or 6 hours to Boston and fistfight a guy who's, like, way taller and way bigger than me. Anyways, like, the thing about Kyrie, it's just... I think some of the things that he's done have been harmless, but because of this insane media cycle, it's worse this year. I think it's way worse than it ever has been, actually. Like, it used to be fun when the NBA would blow up for a day or two, and it would be, like, a bunch of crazy stuff. Like, last year when Chris Paul was, like, storming through the tunnels of the Staples Center trying to fight the Clippers, like, that was awesome, right? Now it's every single day this is a brand new story. Think about Kyrie. He does a lot of the stuff to himself, and I agree with that. But if you take a step back and think about the stuff that he's doing to himself, it shouldn't be a big deal. He was talking to Kevin Durant in the hallway. There's no audio of what he was saying. We had people on Twitter trying to read his lips and body language, and somehow that meant that he and KD were going to be on the Knicks next year. Just take a step back and look at that and think how crazy that is. And that's the narrative now because of a video that some random person in the hallway took. So I understand his frustrations. I don't think he's handling it as well as he should, and I do think it's affecting the team. Outside of that, John, I have a question about the Celtics defense. It's very important. Have you noticed help players on the perimeter are helping probably a second or two before they're supposed to? I see it with Jason Tatum a lot. He'll just leave his guy on the outside to come help and leaving a three-point shooter wide open. They did it last night with Siakam a lot, and then tonight – it was a bunch of different guys, but we've got these perimeter defenders who are digging to help down in the post when either there doesn't need to be help right then, or it's just early and they're leaving wide open shooters. And when you're playing against bigs like Nurkic and Gasol who could pass, you're going to get shredded.
Yeah. The overhelping. I mean, and you know, a lot of times there's a mismatch there. And so they're overcorrecting, but you know, sometimes the cure is worse than the actual affliction. And I feel like that's what's happening is that they're overhelping, you know,
and
they're overhelping.
Their pick and roll defense on those high screens is becoming miserable. Yep. They can't guard anything. If there's a high screen and if the guard's either getting a handoff or rolling off that screen, they're going to score. I mean, how many times did Dame get one-on-one with Al tonight? And speaking of Al, he did not play well on either end of the floor. He had a couple stretches defensively. but he was miserable. And I'm a very big Al Horford fan because, like, it, without him, this machine doesn't go. But he was not good tonight. Anyway,
he's front-rimming a lot. Front-rimming a lot, and you could tell he really gave – he's been playing his tail off since the break.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's he needs Aaron Baines. You could say whatever you want about whether or not he's a five or he should be the five or whether or not Baines should start so that way you can ease in Horford which is something I subscribe to, but his stamina is not great when he's the lone big. I mean they had that section there where they had Mook at the five.
That was
for about a minute, and then they kind of punished him. Nurkic kind of ate his lunch a little bit, and then they brought in the Time Lord there for like 10 seconds of gameplay.
That was pathetic.
And then like forget it, we just got to put Horford back in. You know,
yeah,
I mean,
man.
It's they're so thin, and we've got that 15th roster spot there, and I know they don't want to use it and all this, but Jesus, like that's. And I'm not. They were not going to get Enes Kanter. I'm not suggesting that, but fill it with a big guy. I mean, it just feels like they don't trust Yabu. They don't trust Williams. They don't. Tice is hit or miss. And without Baines, they're really lacking. They're really lacking someone they can count on as a big. And it's clearly far and away the thinnest position on the team.
Absolutely.
I can't think of another position where if someone got hurt tomorrow, they would have as big of an issue in filling that role as, you know, a big. I mean, if let's say Brad Wanamaker, for whatever reason, couldn't play the rest of the season, you feel like they could pull it off with Smart, you know, Kyrie and Rozier.
Right.
That's not the case with the big position. They just don't have enough guys they trust. So
yeah.
I don't buy the idea that they don't have a need there. I think they have a need, and I think they should probably address that sooner than later.
Yeah, I agree. It's just those high screens. I mean, people, the switches are slow, and Brad was talking about it all night. Some people aren't fighting through screens when they probably should be. Their pick-and-roll defense is really concerning in the last two nights. Two more points, you know, real quick. You and Nick were talking about it, and then the conversation kind of went left, so I didn't get to jump in with this. But I think that if you put Jaylen in the starting lineup, and just Jaylen, so it's Kyrie, Smart, Jaylen, Tatum, Horford, obviously that's not ideal, because you'd like to have your max guy in the starting lineup. But if Hayward can play that secondary ball handler, I don't mean run point guard or anything, but when he has the ball in his hands, he seems to be much more confident in actually display that athleticism by getting to the rim or even, you know, he loves that pull-up elbow jumper, but we haven't been seeing it a whole lot lately. And I think that putting the ball in his hands more, where he has more responsibility, is probably a good idea. I mean, he took three shots in 27 minutes tonight, and that's without Terry Rozier playing. That's problematic. And in my last point, I think everyone looks a step slow. I think everyone on the team, Marcus Morris can't shoot right now. Outside of Jaylen, really, it seems like everyone's playing slow. Even Tatum, who's only 20 years old. It just seems like there's a drag to this team, and whether it's because of the media stuff or whether it's because they're tired, I don't know what it is, but have you seen that too? Because it's becoming very obvious to me from top to bottom. Even Kyrie. Kyrie scored 31 tonight in their periods where it just looks like he just doesn't have it.
Yeah, I think that's that connectedness, though. Like, I think that's a – when you don't trust that the guy is going to be where he's going to be, or he's going to come around the way he's supposed to come around, or he's going to do what he's supposed to do, I think everyone ends up hesitating. And I think that's what accounts for that step, you know? And I think that that's that connectiveness that Brad's talking about, and just not trusting each other. And it's trust. I don't mean it in a way like, I don't believe he's going to do it, but it's not knowing that the job is going to get done. You know, and that's the issue. That's been the issue all along, and that's why I kind of stand on Brad's side of this, because it's like, what can you do as a coach with nobody if you don't have enough people who do what they're supposed to do? If you can only play so long, and yes, you could say, well, it's your job to get them through it, but it's somebody different. It's a different problem every night. It's a different person every night. It's a different issue every night. I have a hard time putting that on Brad. I have a whole lot easier time understanding why the players aren't doing what they're supposed to do. You know, and I think that that's the issue, is that confidence, that connectedness. And if you can get them all believing in the same thing and fighting for the same goal and feeling as though that they are unified, you know, that us against them, though they're all, you know, they hate us because they ain't us, you know, all that stuff. If they can bottle that up as a group, great. But right now they're 14 individuals, you know, and that's what's got to change. And it's really hard when you're the epicenter of the NBA media empire universe.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, this team went from it felt like when we were watching the Isaiah Celtics that you were listening to like an underground like band. You know what I mean? That like had a cult following, and it was so fun because it was just like no one else on the outside really like knew all the details. It was only Celtics fans who were really about it. And when they got to play on national TV and they'd go to Golden State and win, you know, with Avery Bradley and Isaiah dominating, like, it was cool. It's like, all right, the world sees it. But then you get to go back and be the punk rock Celtics, you know. Like, it was just a different thing. And I think a lot of the points I made about, like, players holding the ball in front of their face and just getting it taken, I think that's a direct result of what you said, that lack of trust. Because when you have the trust that someone's going to come off the screen right, or they're going to cut right, or the screen's going to come, and it comes even a half a second late, you start to doubt things. And I think that's when you see that lack of connectedness, and it's very obvious that the Celtics have a lack of connectedness and anything like that. And yeah, that's all I got for tonight. Celtics lose 97-92 to the Portland Trailblazers. I believe they play Washington Friday night. So for John Duke, Taylor McLeod, and CLNS Media.
Peace.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcast on the web.